Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we speak with Cindy White, who's been exploring and advancing the integration of sport and faith for over 40 years. Along the way, Cindy was a Division I athlete, a coach, a camp director, a chaplain, an adjunct professor, and a leader with Athletes in Action. Cindy specializes in identity and character formation for athletes and coaches, and so much more. We can't wait to talk with her, so let's get started.
We're so excited to have Cindy White on the podcast. Cindy, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Sports. Grew up loving sports. Came from a family of nine on 50 acres. And I would be perhaps a Hoosier shooting against the barn, riding horses, playing football and baseball every day. And by the time I got to middle school and started playing organized sports, I realized that I was significantly better than a lot of my peers. And I just loved it. I just loved to play anything in skiing and tennis and golf. And so I ended up in high school playing volleyball, basketball, and softball. And an interesting fact that my kids are terribly jealous over, in all three sports, all 3 years, then it was 3 years, we only lost one game. So that was like just fun. And I didn't like waiting even between each season for another sport to start. The sheer joy of it. And then I went on to play in college, had a chance to play with, play for Mick Haley, men's and women's Olympic coach at a junior college at first, which absolutely was such a privilege, an amazing human being and an amazing coach to learn the fundamentals of the game and treat us as decent, dignified human beings. That was great. And then got a full ride to Alabama, and volleyball wasn't as big down there then, but loved it and had a good time. But my sophomore year had a massive knee injury. So I was on and off, ended up playing in the national championship, not the final game. It was at Alabama, so that was fun. That was just a great opportunity. And from there, I was trying to figure out, growing in my faith, trying to figure out where I would go, what I would do next. I love teaching young women how to play the game, fundamentals, big on that. But I also loved connecting with people. So Mick Haley took the job at University of Texas and said, come over and coach with me. So I spent a year at Texas and was one of his assistant coaches and had even more opportunity to follow his great leadership. And that was the pivotal point of trying to decide what I was going to do with my life for the rest of my life.
Well, I knew that was going to be, I knew you were, you had a rich set of experiences to draw upon there with that answer. And I was right. That was great to hear so many things. We actually haven't had a lot of volleyball people on the show. So this is great. This is great. But before we get into that anymore, tell us about faith in your life.
Faith in my life. I grew up in a religious home, went to church. It was not prominent. It was not a space that we occupied in our home where we would talk about it or read. And but I knew there was a God. And primarily, I say that the best way I knew it is creation was the greatest evangelist in my life. Even at a very young age, I've always been drawn to the outdoors. And so God was screaming his goodness and glory through all of his beauty. And I love that. And then going to church and the combination was helping me see that there's something much bigger than Cindy, much bigger than this liminal space we have on earth for a short time. And so in high school, I had heard more clearly what Jesus had done for us. And it wasn't until in college that getting involved with Athletes in Action and having people mentor me and care for me, not just as a All-American volleyball player, but as Cindy. I needed to be found. And I don't know how far you want me to go with this, but Kurt Thompson, psychiatrist, has a great line: we're looking for someone looking for us when we're born. And at first, sports found me because my parents divorced at 10 and a very fractured family. And sports found me. And that was amazing until it wasn't. And I had a career-ending injury. And when you're on your back, there's really only one way to look. If your anchors are solely into sports, you'll be on a roller coaster the rest of your life. And so at the University of Alabama and then at Texas, really got involved with campus ministries and people loving me for me. And I desperately needed that. I needed to be seen for who I was, not what I can do for the school or the crowds or anything else. And that's when my faith took off. And at the University of Texas, trying to figure out what to do. And I had already gotten some Bible training, some theological training, and I wanted to coach. But at Texas, I realized coaching young people is about 15% of the game. And that's what's so hard for elite coaches these days, that you spend so much time raising money and in the thick of it. And I wanted to encourage young people to know Christ and understand the love of God. And so I was sitting in my little poor apartment on Guadalupe Avenue in Austin, Texas, and God was inviting me to hold out a piece of paper. And I was like, what should I do, God? And he said, you sign the bottom and I'll fill in the rest. And I was like, that seems like a fun challenge. I don't know what that means, but okay, let's go. So that was the beginning of an amazing journey for 40 some years being in full-time ministry.
Well, Cindy, that's such a unique story. 9 kids in your family, Division I athlete, and it's also a shared story. You know, people talking about just the love of sport, things that sustain you, connection to other people, feeling called into something. I think people can learn from the uniqueness of it, but also the idea that your experiences kind of represent many of the folks, I think, in our audience, which is great. And I can't wait to dig into more of that. Before we do, I wonder, is there something about you? I know you've shared a lot already. Something about you that's unique, maybe listeners wouldn't expect, maybe a hobby, an interest, something that you want to share.
That's interesting. Well, I will say, but I do have something else briefly, that it was always a little bit intimidating dating guys because I didn't want them to be afraid of my athleticism. And I didn't put it out there, but, the first time John and I played golf, I shot one under par. And I'm athletic, but I'm not trained in golf. And he, from the course, called home, told his dad, and his dad said, okay, you got to marry her.
Well, we know your husband, John, and that story is going to be precious for us. We're going to use that quite a bit. That's fantastic. And just so you know, most of the time, we're going to need you to let us win. I mean, our egos are pretty fragile. So just so you know, let us win every once in a while. That'd be fantastic. So Cindy, tell us.
I have to say this because you just begged the question. 8th grade, I went skiing with David DeLappa. And I acted like I was bad and I made him feel better. And I fell sometimes. And afterwards, I was like, I have more integrity than that. I will never do that again.
Well, good for you. Good for you. You're better off doing that. It's just you're not married to David DeLappa either. Yeah. There you go. So, I mean, you've done so many things in your sports ministry life. I wonder if we can start at the end. Start right now and just tell us a little bit about what's filling your mind and your thoughts now as a person that has been engaged in ministry and in sport all these years.
Thanks for the question. I am a very passionate person. The older I get, I try to narrow my focus. And a wise leader told me a few years ago, Cindy, you only get two things to choose now. And that is growing whole people and cultivating positive, integrated organizations and teams. So those two things I love, and I've learned a lot from my gardening experiences, what really helps creation flourish. And with that, I have taken a lot of time to explore in the last 5 years how people really grow. And I've been in ministry my whole life, and I'm committed to evangelism and discipleship. But I've been really challenged to step back and look at how people really grow. And that's understanding childhood development. That's understanding all of the messages we get growing up. That's understanding the messages in the dominant sports culture. Much of it in our culture is the never enough message. And oftentimes when we're meeting with people and seeing them and trying to encourage them, we are really pulling the plants out by the roots and just saying, grow, 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 and let's see you produce and more fruit. And that pressure that we do in ministry is not much different than what we do in sports. And it's not helpful. And so I have found probably the most transformative experiences in working with people is getting more to the roots of their story, because we often clip off the vices of the fruit in our lives and say, repent, pray, and move on. But it's really about the roots. It's really about their upbringing. It's really about how they view themselves in the world. And if we can create hospitable spaces for them to be able to trust us and sit with us and not judge and condemn, trust is built, which is something desperately needed now for Christians. There's just too much disintegration in this world, and particularly amongst Christian leaders. So if we can occupy spaces for trust to be built, for them to be seen and heard, we would be so much better ministers of the gospel. And so I have spent the last 5 years on understanding people's identities, their moral, social, spiritual formation, and also have worked a lot with Tracy Hansen Initiative with doing your own story work. And I've been a part of that with my own journey. Come from a very fractured home, middle child and neglected. And the first time I heard I love you from my mom, I was 21. So that's the story of a lot of people and a lot of athletes. And if we can instead not look at the fruit, because every vice I believe is a misdirected good, behavior, there's always a reason behind the reason, always. And instead of thinking as a minister, what's wrong with you, a better question would be sitting in there with compassion and empathy. What happened to you? Tell me about it. I care about you. And I think of the passage in scripture where Hagar was banished and sent out, and the angel of the Lord found her by a stream in the desert. He sees her. And so if we can learn to see people for who they are, what's really in their heart, provide that safe space, I have seen more fruit and more flourishing and more multiplication going this route. You don't have to force people to go share their faith a lot. It's the natural multiplication of the created world is it will produce fruit. It will bear fruit if you take care of the roots and the trunk and the leaves and the pruning. And so I do a lot now, and with identity formation, and started an initiative, the Eric Little Initiative. He's always been an exemplar to me. And I'm getting great traction and a lot of interest because I've done some work with some pro athletes in the last few years with focus groups and received a grant. And I'm having pro athletes say, I have no idea who I am other than an athlete. I have no idea. And that's sad. And we've got to be available and help them and not be pulling them out by the roots, but actually sit down with them in a safe space and not asking them to produce and commodify and use, but to just love them.
I'm intrigued, Cindy, that you have such a heart for people and have worked in spaces where you've been interacting with individuals, you know, in mentorship capacities and ministry capacities. And yet it seems like what you've got going on here is much more systematic that you're building out. Can you tell us a little bit about the curriculum that you're creating, that you've created, that's going to be sort of this more macro level support for athletes that goes, I think that speaks to another space in your heart that is not just the one-on-one interactions, but getting messaging out to a broader number.
Yes, I'm working hard with a small group of folks. I don't like to create in a vacuum. And we've spent a year developing, and it's not finished yet. We're getting there. But I want to start with a small group and test it. And I'm doing testing right now on the ground. And I would love this to be available, perhaps starting at Christian schools, Christian high schools, Christian colleges, organizations, parachurch. And I believe in training. And so the group I'm testing with now, I tell them they're getting free seminary education, so they better appreciate it, that they're doing the readings I supply that are not in the curriculum because I want them to understand what I'm trying to do with the curriculum. Going through a creation, fall, redemption narrative. And that approach seems to be very helpful according to the way I believe people grow. And I would love to make it available. And honestly, Chad, I don't know how it's all going to pan out quite yet. But I also started a consultancy that's new. I want to be available for personal consultation. Take this to schools, happy to speak and teach and offer workshops. I want to just build it out slowly to gain momentum. I do think it could be a certificate course or an undergrad course. Stanford has a great course, one of their most popular, Life Design. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but modeled after some of those practices as well to help people create a vision for their future. So whether you go into ministry or not, that we're all kingdom builders in anything that we do. So I want that to be very explicitly affirmed that whatever we do, we're building God's kingdom. And let's do it good to produce goodness and beauty and justice in this world.
Yeah. And Cindy, I think as you talk about that curriculum, those possibilities and those spaces, I'm seeing this sort of thing coming alongside of sport. And maybe I'm seeing that incorrectly. Maybe it needs to be infused in the middle of sport. I guess I'm wondering about the influences on an athlete, right? There's all these stresses. All this desire for production, for you to bear, and in some cases, sport fruit is success, winning, statistics, all those sorts of things. And that's not going to change. The the requirements of the sport world are going to be performance. And I guess I'm wondering, do you think that the formula here to make people flourish, athletes flourish more in this environment, is to build up the supports around them? Or are you thinking that a fundamental change in sport itself is a more fruitful path?
That's a really good question and a hard question, and probably the most often asked. You're talking about deep systemic issues built on the pharaonic system of produce, consume, commodify. And Walter Brueggemann does a beautiful job at exposing that system that is very similar to a sports system today. Can we change the system? I don't know. We have to learn to live in it without being of it. However, I do believe it has to be an inside out, and there has to be an acknowledgement and an understanding of how systems work. And I love this quote by Howard Thurman, who was Martin Luther King Jr.'s, one of his spiritual advisors. And because this was during the civil rights unrest, Howard Thurman somehow was able to stay grounded and centered in the midst of this type of system. And he says, "You are the only one who has ever lived. And if you cannot hear the sound of the genuine in you, you will all of your life spend your days on the ends of the strings that somebody else pulls." So to answer your question, it has to start from the inside out. And if we pretend it doesn't exist, then we're lying to ourselves. We're lying to God. We're lying to others. And if we are going to name the name of Christ, I believe there has to be a radical shift. A radical shift. And my intention, and I believe the only way it will work, if it will, I mean, honestly, we're sitting on the Titanic. So if it will, it's going to have to be, I mentor some coaches at Baylor. And we spend time in safe places. And if this isn't exposed, I still wonder why BYU cannot play on Sunday and we still do. Where is that day of rest? Where is the time to renew and refresh? Let's be radical. I would love all of the coaches to buy into loving God and neighbor as self, writing the opponent coach a note of encouragement. I loved what the volleyball team did a few weeks ago. They lost 0-3 to Texas, and afterwards they came together and they shared and had a prayer after getting humiliated on the court. That's beautiful. But it has to start with an acknowledgement first. And so I think we keep working and exposing. I'm all about truth-telling graciously. I love in Genesis 3 where God looks at Adam and Eve, and after they decided to stiff-arm him, they had everything they needed, and he says, "Where are you?" It's not a geographical question. He's wondering where they are spiritually, emotionally, and socially, and they just kept their fig leaves on. And you get to Genesis 11. Let's build a tower. Totally antithetical to what God, the cultural mandate was. Let's build a tower and create a name for ourselves. If that is our mission in life, then we are not going to be able to build God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's going to take Howard Thurman type people to stay grounded and centered and tell the truth and expose and encourage in a charitable and hospitable way. So where we get, I don't know, but I want to go to bed every night with my head on the pillow knowing that I'm doing what I can when I can.
Cindy, you're in Waco, you're at Baylor, at a college, a university like Brian's and like mine, that is a Christian school and has athletics in which we are trying hard to win and to be the best that we can. With what you've just said, what are the difficulties you come across when you're working with Baylor coaches and athletes that you wouldn't have at a public institution? And on the flip side, what makes it easier in a system like this?
Actually, I'm not sure that anything makes it easier. We have the on-ramp. We have the permission. What makes it harder is that a dualistic approach to sports and theology make it an either or. And sometimes I get coaches or athletic directors, Cindy, you just don't get it. I was like, yes, I do get it. It's really, really, really hard. I get that. But winning and competitive excellence and building spiritual and moral character are not mutually exclusive. And so I'm glad you asked this question, because I spoke last year to the whole football staff several sessions in the summer, and this was the question often asked. And I opened up one of my sessions, which it was fun to do this. I said, Bobby Knight's one of my mentors. They looked at me, and I was at the game when he threw the chair. Now, what I mean by this is sometimes we will over-spiritualize because we're not doing a good enough job coaching and leadership. And I believe we need to be competent in both. So if you're pushing your athletes really hard, that's good, because life is really hard. If you're under 500 winning percentage, go back to the drawing board and figure out what's wrong. We can do that. Is it recruiting? Is it part of my master's is systems and how they work and organizational conflict? And so is it recruiting? Is it money? What are the issues that are preventing us? And I believe if we're going to be those type of tent makers in the world, we've got to do it well. So I like to push competence in the game as much as the moral and spiritual education. If I were to ask you, would you rather have a Christian surgeon or a competent surgeon? I'm sorry, I want a competent one. But I would really prefer both. I would prefer both. So I believe we've got to be honest with ourselves and not hide behind our fig leaves of, yeah, but leading Bible studies and people are coming to Christ, but we're honestly not doing very well at leading our staff team. I believe Christ enters every space. If this whole domain is his, then he gets to enter staff meetings, how we talk to our fellow coaches. He gets to enter hiring and firing practices. So this is a huge, huge challenge, but it starts with just being open and honest. And the biggest challenge I find, I used to do a lot of conflict management seminars, the biggest challenge I find among Christians is the lack of transparency and trust, and glazed over by Christian language. And that is probably one of my biggest hot buttons, instead of sitting in a room, building trust by being honest. It is a much more fruitful, productive way to go. And too many Christians are afraid to go there.
Well, Cindy, we're going to have to talk again, because this is just barely scratching the surface. But I do have one more question I'd love to get to, just to follow up on what you just said. And I want to get really practical here. You talk a lot about trust building and athlete identity. And you talk to coaches who are right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a pretty common experience. I know it's a common experience. Nobody wins all the time. Everybody's career comes to an end. And we don't want to see a person's identity and value tied up in their performance. And yet coaches often have to make decisions about starting five, playing time, even being on the team. They're going to have some significant ramifications for that athlete. They're going to have to say, you know what, you're no longer a part of this community. How does a coach communicate to an athlete in a trusting and loving way? I am making a decision based on your performance, and this could be the end of what you're doing. And yet, I still love you. I still value you. They feel like mixed messages. What advice would you give a coach in that circumstance?
That's a great question, and it's hard. It's hard to do. I think you partly answered that. That if they do care, sports can be a great arena for moral formation, a great place if it's done well. I care about you, and I have to make the decision. I know it's going to hurt. I know it's going to feel bad. And I also know that you have the rest of your life, and you might have some ups and downs. You're going to have some wins and losses. And that does not define you. That doesn't define who you are. If you're grounded as a child of God, and you don't know who you are until you know whose you are. So I care about you. You're always invited into this space, but these are tough decisions. And sometimes the pendulum swung too far and we overcoddle. Life's tough. And we can help them have resilience for life if we do it the right way, with kindness and with gentleness and with care, not an email or a shocking call to come into my office, you're done, bye, pack your bags. That's not a good idea. But that's a great question. It's really hard to do. So we've got to keep practicing. It's a lifeline journey for all of us to practice getting better at loving and making hard decisions, because we will face life every single day, and oak trees only get strong by really, really strong roots, because the storms will hit, as we well know.
Cindy, I want to ask you for just a couple of paragraphs here, your thoughts about something that we'll discuss next time we have you on the podcast, and that will be within the next 12 months. We have the fourth Global Congress on Sport and Christianity coming up in Waco at Baylor this coming summer, July, August of 2025, which will be preceded by a pre-conference that you're leading. Can you give us a little bit about that pre-conference, just a little teaser?
Thanks, Chad. Yes, Elizabeth Bounds, Hope grad, and I are offering a one-day conference for women leaders in sports. To learn how to navigate the very unique issues that we do, and even some of the things we talked about on this program, primarily for encouraging, equipping, and connecting, so that we don't have to feel isolated in oftentimes a male-dominated culture. So I would love to have a lot of women, either academics or practitioners, to lock arms and encourage each other so we can keep fighting the good fight.
Cindy, thank you for doing that. That's so exciting that you're pulling that together. That will be prior to the Global Congress, but it's also connected, and that's a great thing. And we're just hoping that a lot of people can see that as an entryway to also participate in the Global Congress. That'll be wonderful. We're excited to have that come up, and we're really thankful that you came on the podcast with us. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you both very much, and thanks for the work that you do. Delighted.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport Faith Life podcast, a conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.